There we go. Calling to order this meeting of the House Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. Dave Pinto here with my colleague Dave Baker, the two co-chairs of the committee. Members, we have got, we're going to be approving some minutes and receiving a couple presentations. We're in a little bit of a transition period as we are finishing up our budget bill for Chair Baker and me to present to the committee. There's a few things that we need to finalize. I will note this schedule at the end as well, but it is likely that we'll have a part of the reason I want to start 45 minutes late today is both shorter agenda, but then also I expect that we may well have a heavier tomorrow and maybe even Friday morning before we go to legislative break at noon on Friday in order to make sure we do our business of getting our bill voted out. So we can have more discussion about that. In the meantime, I wonder, Mr. Chair, if you're willing to move approval of the minutes of April 8th, you were the presiding officer, so thought we might do that.
I will, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Members, these are our minutes of April 8th, 2025. There's been a motion to approve them. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. The minutes of April 8th are approved. Thanks, members. As we are in this kind of transition period, as I said, what seemed to make sense to do for today is both receive a reminder of our of the fiscal constraints that we're under through the agreement that our leaders have made. As I've been talking to folks around the Capitol, I feel like there's been some confusion on that, so wanted to make sure to cover that. And then also, one of the constraints that we're going to hear several times about relates to the Workforce Development Fund. It's a key source of funding for our committee. It is off limits, as we're going to be hearing, but for now. But I thought it would make sense to learn more about it in the prospect that it will be a source that we can use for funds as well. So we will transition then to have, and we could have you could either stay there or go front and find Ms. Eng, if you want to just stay there, as often the case with our fiscal staff, or the nonpartisan staff, pardon me. So Ashley Eng from House Fiscal, our terrific fiscal analyst for our committee, is going to be talking with us about the budget constraints that we have through the agreement. Ms. Eng.
Mr. Chair and members, Ashley Eng from the House Fiscal Analysis Department. Today I will briefly go over the budget target set by the budget resolution adopted by the Ways and Means Committee on April 1st of 2025. The adoption of the budget resolution comes from the permanent rules of the House, specifically Rule 4.03, Paragraph B. And in that rule, the budget resolution must set the maximum limit on net expenditures for the next fiscal biennium for the general fund, and may also set limits for the expenditures from funds other than the general fund. So, the fiscal tracking of the budget resolution can be seen in the spreadsheet in your materials. If you look at the middle column of the spreadsheet, you'll see the February forecast base for each committee area. Then to the left is the change from base. This is the budget target. And to the right of the February forecast base is the total budgeted amount for each committee area. The Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development row is the last one on the spreadsheet, line 24. You'll see that the base budget from the February forecast is the $331,622,000. This amount funds DEED, DLI, Explore Minnesota, the IRRR, Destination Medical Center, Bureau of Mediation Services, and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. The change from base is the column the change from base column is the target set by Ways and Means. You'll see there that the Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development Committee's target is negative $50 million, leading to the total budgeted amount of $281,622,000. So now if you refer to the budget resolution in your materials, you'll see the workforce budgeted amount identifying on line 2.9. So there is that $281,622,000. Now on lines 2.20, you can see the Workforce Development Fund base budget set forth. So that amount is $127,885,000. This amount comes from the base spending accounted for by the February forecast's consolidated fund statement. That includes the dislocated worker program, the base spending of DEED and DLI. So the base spending for DEED is $46,554,000. The base spending for Department of Labor and Industry is $13,652,000. And the base spending for the dislocated worker program is $67,679,000. That's for the upcoming biennium. So that really concludes my presentation. Do you have any questions?
Well, and I may just clarify something, Ms. Eng. So that line 2.20 in the budget resolution,
yeah,
the $127,885,000 for use of the Workforce Development Fund in our bill, which matches, I guess it doesn't appear in the spreadsheet. But in any case, that is then the restriction on us having any net spending from the Workforce Development Fund, correct?
Yes. Okay. It includes only base spending.
Okay. And this is probably a key point that in conversation with folks around the Capitol, I think some folks may have missed, is that we are not allowed to do any net spending of any kind out of the Workforce Development Fund. So, and correct, Ms. Eng? I mean, meaning that it's not allowed to sort of have to sort of increase our spending from that fund?
No.
Oh, correct.
You cannot increase spending.
Okay, good. The no was confirming what I was saying. Good. Members, are there questions relating to this? I suspect at this point members are very familiar with what was just presented, but you may have questions you want to ask just to clarify for others. Representative Schultz, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we're thinking about the $50 million that we need to be less, is that for the four-year or is that for the two-year?
Ms. Eng, I think I know the answer. Ms. Eng, if you can answer that question.
Mr. Chair and members, that is the biennial spending.
So I guess $50 million for the first biennium, $50 million for the planning biennium,
yes.
Representative Schultz.
Yes.
Good question. Anybody else have questions to clarify, as I said, on behalf of yourselves or on behalf of the public, about the constraints we've been under as we're trying to put together a budget bill here? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because this looks different than I think in the past, can you just explain the difference between the targets that were set in the House and in the Senate, just so that the folks are looking at the budgets?
An excellent question. What I am familiar with is that the Senate, so we have the $50 million cut per biennium. Representative Schultz was asking about that. I know that's an $8 million increase in the Senate for the first biennium. I'm not sure of the planning biennium. That's your, Ms. Eng, do you happen to know?
No, but I also think that their budgets for DLI and DEED are also separate, so there's two different targets the Senate side.
That's an excellent point. I believe that's right. So, in fact, I suppose the labor target, so actually a reminder to all of us that the Senate has both a jobs committee and a labor committee, which combined in ours, and I'm actually not familiar with the labor target. I wouldn't think that I'm not aware of this. In any case, regarding the job, you can tell we're quite focused on the House. But in our area, there's an $8 million increase for the Senate, and the Senate also is able to tap in the Workforce Development Fund. So the total gap between what the Senate has been able to spend and what we are, I believe, approaches $140 million. So as folks are seeing the Senate bills coming out, and then as they'll see our bill coming out, there's a gap $140 million to spend. Chair Baker, something you want to add about that? I just wanted to – Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you for that. And, again, as we kind of dive into this a little bit further, I think it's just a different philosophy about, again, Chair Pinto and I have had very clear objectives of $50 million cut to our committee target, really, of both labor and deed. It doesn't look like we care as much about people, and that's not obviously the case. We care deeply about this, and there's much, much differences in the Senate and the House approach. We are trying to really focus in on the areas that we can agree to. When you have a tie in this kind of a situation, I think we need to just really be careful how we're walking through this. I think this is going to be a very good exercise today about where we need to focus, and when we get to the next step, we'll have to see what that looks like as well. But again, we just have much different rules right now to play with than they did across the street. So I just want to maybe add that, and I'm very happy to see the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll note that I think it was I think Representative Johnson was fast on his feet there getting the targets over in the Senate, that it's actually in total between the Jobs Committee and Labor Committee is about a $10 million increase in the planning in the first biennium. It looks like about a $6 million increase in the planning biennium. So again, we've got a $50 million cut, about a $10 million increase, $6 million increase in the Senate. And then, of course, they have access to the Workforce Development Fund right now. So as Chair Baker says, we don't want folks to misread the bill coming out, that there's some difference in wanting to support folks, or also that there's an issue regarding structuring grants or other things that we really recognize. We are just, for the moment, stuck in terms of what we can spend. Anything else anybody wants to ask or comment at this point regarding this issue? And otherwise, we'll move to the Workforce Development Fund. I'm not seeing anything. And so, Ms. Eng, thank you so much for your work, for your terrific work. Ms. Shalene is not here. Anna Shalene is our House researcher. I know that she's working on matters for us, and we're just really grateful. I know on behalf of Chair Baker and me, very grateful to you for your work. And speaking of folks we're grateful to, I'll ask the team from DEED to make your way to the front. I know this is a very challenging time to ask you to put this together. I just really want to recognize your incredibly hard work. Commissioner Majors was here yesterday as well. I know you having to go to the Senate, and there's a lot happening, so we really appreciate it. But I do think that this will be very helpful information for our committee as we move forward, since this is important background for us. So I'm not sure who's going to be going first. Looks like possibly Commissioner McKinnon, since you kind of sat down first and pulled the microphone to you. So, Commissioner, please identify yourself, and you can proceed with your testimony. And actually, can I just note, just before you begin, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, I believe that you have announced that you will be leaving DEED after a number of years in your role, quite a few years, in fact. Can I ask Commissioner, how long have you been at DEED, Commissioner McKinnon?
Mr. Chair and members, I have actually been at DEED since 2006.
Okay.
And I've actually been the Deputy Commissioner for almost 11 years. And I would hold on the comment that you're making that I'm leaving.
Okay. 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 Fair enough. But I do just want to recognize the work that you and your colleague to your right are sitting, the work that you all are doing. We're very grateful to you for your work, and to Mr. Bowdrey on your left. You all have done have been working incredibly hard, and obviously for a number of years. And grateful to you, sir, for that. And so I'm going to ask you to please then dive in and begin to present put together the presentation. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kevin McKinnon. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development and Research, joined up today by Deputy Commissioner Mark Majors, who runs our Workforce Development Division. That's an important distinction here, because the Workforce Development Division touches both of our divisions. The Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program resides in the economic development area, whereas the Dislocated Worker Program resides in our Employment and Training Unit under Deputy Commissioner Majors. So the presentation today is about the Workforce Development Fund, and just a little history here. The fund was established back in 1990, essentially to fund employment and training programs, but really based on trying to get our unemployed workers back in the workforce as quickly as possible, but also adapting to the skills that our employers are needing. The fund obviously had broad support when it was created, both labor, business, and higher education, obviously, were all involved, and it is a priority written into law to support dislocated workers. Over time, however, as the fund continues to grow, there has been legislative transfers, and basically what that means is the legislature is spending out of the fund every year for other workforce priorities that it determines are important to adapt to the changing needs of our labor market. So moving forward, what is the Workforce Development Fund? The Workforce Development Fund is a special assessment that is levied at a rate of 0.1% per year on taxable wages. So if you think about the fluctuation of our labor market, there's roughly 3 million people in the labor market today. That has significantly grown over the years, but there's continuously some churn, obviously, across there. So this is collected quarterly. And so it can fluctuate, and As I mentioned earlier, in my 18 years at DEED, I have seen it fluctuate pretty significantly in obviously downturns. The dislocated worker program basically receives its funding after the legislature determines how much it's going to spend out of the fund each year.
And Commissioner, actually, can you go back to that slide? And we'll have a discussion after, members, but if you have clarifying questions, we can do that, and I'm going to ask one right now. You say, your note says it's a 0.1% per year on all taxable wages. I guess it was my understanding that actually it's taxable wages up to, I think it's like $40-some thousand, which I'll say I'm pretty interested in. But could you just clarify that if you know? Commissioner, please.
Mr. Chair, yeah, thank you for pointing that out. It is 0.1% of taxable wages up to 60% of the state's average annual wage.
Please.
Just some background. The state's average annual wage is $39 an hour. Let's say it's $40 an hour or roughly $80,000 a year. So if you take 60% of that, obviously it's roughly $50,000 a year is what the assessment would be on those wages. Yep.
Okay. I'll want to get back to that after the presentation time, but good to get that clarified. And again, if members do have clarifying questions, please ask, but otherwise, please continue, Commissioner.
Thank you. So the structure, as I sort of pointed out, every year there is a forecast. And basically that forecast is done on what does the labor market look like. We run the Labor Market Information Office at DEED, so we're constantly monitoring that and trying to forecast out what things are going to look like, and ultimately what that means is how much these collections will be on a quarterly basis and then on a yearly basis. Once that is done, there are legislative appropriations. Generally, those legislative appropriations run through DEED, Department of Labor and Industry, or other workforce appropriations that the legislature determines that it would make. And following that, the remainder that's left essentially goes to support the dislocated worker program. There is a formula which distributes money off the top of that fund, whatever is left after that, and then the remainder sits to be prepared for downturns in the economy or other things that might happen in which our dislocated worker providers would need additional resources. So what I mean by that is when there are mass layoffs, when there are small layoffs and people go and look for services to get retrained, this is the money that actually pays for those folks to access that. I'll go a little bit further into some of these uses, but based on our last summary that we saw, we see it generally quarterly. There was about $85 million in the fund at this point for board authorization. And I'll talk about board authorization here in a minute.
And members, I'll maybe note that can you just go back a slide? I believe that Senate budget bill contains about that amount, the $85 million of spending from the Workforce Development Fund. In terms of that net increase, just to sort of focus members' attention on that. Mr. Commissioner, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So again, the workforce development uses, workforce development fund uses. So obviously legislative appropriations, you determine organizations, you determine uses, and we administer those programs. Dislocated worker program, so that's actually the funding that helps the individuals access training services, but it's also some administration that funds our not only our efforts but efforts on the ground at all our career force centers and our local workforce development areas. If on March 1st, after March 1st, the board determines, after looking at the forecasted labor market demand, the board may transfer some money to the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program. The Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program does have its own general fund appropriation that in most of my time at DEED is generally insufficient to meet demand. And so periodically there will be some money transferred here into the into that program so that we can do grants for the rest of that fiscal year. It doesn't happen very often, but it has happened where we've transferred money. There are also what we call 6% projects of the balance that comes back. So, you know, roughly $1.8 million a year or so where you can collect information on various programs. You can disseminate information on various programs, or you could continue to do research essentially on what types of things might be useful in our labor market. And those are the types of other special projects that I've listed here. So just a real quick overview of the Dislocated Worker Program. And again, if you have questions, I'm not the one to answer them, but I do have someone here to answer them. The Dislocated Worker Program is obviously designed to get people back into the workforce as quickly as possible. It also is designed to remove the barriers that people have to access training. And so there's all kinds of services that are obviously part of this, from career planning and counseling to job search assistance, identifying employers that may be a good fit, and then, of course, the training and educational opportunities, and particularly for jobs that are in demand as of today. The Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Board, I will talk here just a little bit about their authority. And in a second, I will describe for you who makes up that board. But the board essentially considers policy for the MJSP program and the Dislocated Worker program. So specifically in the MJSP program, what types of efforts are businesses making to connect into various maybe populations that have not been considered by that employer previously. Those are the types of things that you might ask from a policy perspective, and how we're trying to help our businesses connect to the people that they need, that they're looking for, but also that could take part in the labor force. It does approve every grant that comes through for our MJSP program. So I'll describe MJSP in a minute, but there's roughly five grant rounds a year. Every time there's probably anywhere from 10 to 15 grants that we're doing. So the board obviously approves all of those grants as well. It also approves the Dislocated Worker and MJSP budgets, and so right-sizing it to make sure that we can provide the staff support, the monitoring, and everything else that goes along with it. It does approve allocations to the workforce development areas and our small layoff independent grantees. And so what I mean by that is if our local workforce development areas have spent all of the money that they have received, they can come back to the board based on the demand that they're facing, and the board could authorize additional funding to help that organization serve the individuals who are seeking that service. There's a number of different metrics in law that the board monitors and our staff report on relative to the performance of not only the organizations who are administering this, but also the outcomes on the individuals who have gained employment. This is also where the board could transfer those funds. And as I mentioned, after March 1st of every year, when we get the basically the labor market report, and there are excess funds and there are demand for MJSP grants, the board could transfer $1 million or whatever number that is to satisfy that program. The board is a 12-member board, and there are direct appointments, seven of which are from the governor. The commissioner of our department is the chair, Obviously, our higher education institutions are also on the board, along with a variety of other folks that are representing business, labor, and nonprofits. The House does have an appointment. The Speaker does make an appointment to this board, and you can see listed here, it is Eric Skoog from Teamsters Local 320. So the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program is a program that, as I mentioned, is funded in our general fund budget. It is essentially a program that provides grants of up to $400,000 to higher education institutions, accredited higher education institutions, that basically partner with businesses to develop new training or retraining for existing employees. The key piece to this program is that this is not for training that's just available off the shelf that our colleges already provide. This is for new curriculum based on the needs of the employer or a consortium of employers. This is a very well-known program, certainly amongst our educational institutions, and as you would imagine in our ecosystem, our economic development folks all across the state, along with our higher education institutions, are constantly talking to businesses and trying to figure out how they can be helpful and provide the folks that they need, and certainly that we want in the workforce to help the businesses be successful. There are also two other authorized programs under the MJSP program. The Pathways program, which is essentially kind of a similar program, but it's based on training for low-income people. And so businesses are partnering with higher ed, but they have specific targets of basically who they are trying to train and hire. And then we also have something called our low-income worker training program that provides grants of up to $200,000 that can go outside of higher education institutions and into nonprofit entities to help train people for jobs in demand. Important to note, the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program only funds training. There are no support services. There is nothing else that we fund. The MJSP fund simply deals with the cost of the training that is proposed. Furthermore, this program does require a match. And so the higher education institution often will provide a match along with the business. So we routinely would see $2 million training programs of which the state would provide $400,000, the higher education institution might provide $400,000, and then the business would provide the other $1.2 million. And that concludes our presentation, and be happy to try and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll have a few, but I'll just see first if other folks have, and otherwise, Representative Schultz and then Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McKinnon, I was excited to hear, and I even texted my friends on the other side of the aisle because this sounded like great news. So I want to confirm what you said for us. You said that the average annual wage in Minnesota was $39 an hour for approximately $80,000 a year. Is that accurate?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, I looked at our unemployment statistics yesterday that are posted on the website, and I believe it said $39 an hour is roughly the annual, the average wage. Yep.
Representative Schultz will keep going, I think, but Representative Schultz, yeah. You all done? Okay. Representative Bakeberg, you're up next.
Looks like they're having a conversation.
Oh, so. Looks like maybe a conversation. Okay, Commissioner, did you, okay, doesn't look like anything further, so Representative Bakeberg, to you, sir.
So thank you, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon. Can you talk about, it piqued my interest on slide 9, where you talked about the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program, and it really ties into, honestly, a bill that I had that we've had ongoing discussion about, but really an awareness for me about a lot of different pathways. And this is a passion for me about particularly with high school students finding their niche and how they're wired and the different pathways. So roughly $1 million that DEED has on pathway programs. DLI has workforce development. There's other funds within DEED. MDE has work-based learning. DLI has youth skills. Office of Higher Ed plays into this. And literally this morning on the way up, I was talking with a member of the business community, and we were brainstorming how do we in our area help businesses, help schools navigate and access all of these funds. And as we were talking, you know, I have about a 45-minute drive in. Honestly, it's really frustrating that we have to have the conversation about developing a program at our local level. Can you talk about how the different agencies work together? And that's the important part. How do the agencies work together to educate people, normal people that are working their jobs, doing their thing in their community, about the different funds available for workforce development?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Majors might be more appropriate to answer the question. But what I would say, on at least behalf of my division, when we work with employers, when we work with our local economic development entities and chambers and partners all across the state, I can assure you that we are, and we're dealing with an employer, I can assure you that my staff and Deputy Commissioner Major's staff are looking for any and all programs that are available, and we try to do as much customer service on the interaction as we can to make it work, because we know obviously the demand is great, but most importantly, that's what essentially my division does, is we try to work with employers and make them aware of and have them give them the ability to access funds. But as it relates to your question, I think Deputy Commissioner Majors would probably give you a better, some better insight into that.
Yeah, let's go to Commissioner Majors. Please identify yourself and if you can answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. Mark Majors, Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development, DEED. Mr. Chair, member, in terms of the alignment of our workforce system, that work had started about a year or so ago under the direction of the governor to bring the entities that you just discussed, MDE, DEED, Office of Higher Education, Department of Human Services together, agencies that have workforce development funding together, to talk about how can we, as well as we included some other entities like Department of Corrections and others, into the conversation about aligning our workforce system and to look at how are we spending our dollars overall and to see to avoid duplication, essentially, in funding. But also to make sure that we're meeting the mark and where we see that there are some vacancies. So coming out of the COVID, we saw high vacancy rates in healthcare. So are we directing our funding towards healthcare training so that we can help make sure we're putting enough people in healthcare to meet the moment that we need? On the local level, we have what's called local workforce development boards. We have 16 across the state of Minnesota. That is what they do. They bring partners together. They look at, and it's inclusive of unions, education, employers, and usually they are employer-led, as well as other state agencies, to talk about what resources that may be available in that area and to see how they can leverage them and align those dollars together. So in your area, I'm sure there is one. We could identify a contact person so that you speak with them.
Representative Baker, back to you.
Yeah, thank you. Department of Corrections, I hadn't even thought of that. That, you know, Representative Frazier has brought bills, you know, and we've had those conversations. So thank you for bringing that up. I hadn't thought of that right away. That's a very important piece to support our the members of our community that are coming out of incarceration. Local workforce development boards, thank you for bringing that up. I'll continue to work with them. And I think I heard you say, and I'll just make my point, this started a year ago. So we're still in the infancy of this, but I guess I would really challenge, and Chair Pinto, you and I had a productive conversation, so you know where my frustration is with this issue. There's a lot of programs, and it is very difficult to navigate and know which one works, which one doesn't. And we had a conversation just yesterday, or it's kind of blending together. This week, we'll leave it at that. But even just having conversations with DLI and MDE about youth skills training and work-based learning, and I just asked for a simple flow chart of, okay, like a compare and contrast of what work-based learning does, what youth skills does, and we didn't that's not out there. So I mean I'm not that smart of a person, but I was able to put it together in about a 30-second conversation or a 30-second notepad sketching about some of the pros and cons, which helped mm-hmm. me have a conversation with both chairs about the difference between work-based learning and youth skills. Okay, that's something that agencies should be able to produce very easily so that the local workforce development board can say, this is something, you know, if you're looking at work-based learning, here's the pros, here's the cons. If you're looking at youth skills, here's pros and cons. And then here are some other programs that you may not even be aware of. Like, that's good governance. So I would just challenge whatever agency it is to let's break down the silos and let's start working together. So I appreciate that it happened a year ago. Frankly, it should have happened years ago.
Representative Baker, thank you. Before I move on, I'll just note that, and I think Chair Baker is aware of my interest in this too, that it is we have a complicated, set of programs. I think a little bit of it is, as Representative Greenman said the other day, the Taylor Swift issue that and this may not be so much the programs that you're referencing, but even when I'm looking at the low income worker training program, I'm still even now a tiny bit confused thinking about that versus a whole series of other programs we have. As we've talked about structuring grants, as I've kind of talked about moving to competitive grants, one concern that's expressed among quite a few about that, but one of them is simply, it's even unclear what competitive grant programs, which ones you apply to and what the structures are. And just, it's, so there's a lot going on here. We're trying to, I'm trying to move, and I think Chair Baker is as well, in a direction to make all that clearer. I'm especially eager, no matter what happens in the budget process, now that I'm pretty new to this space, to work with the agencies and others over the summer and beyond to say, how do we have a system that kind of works together in a coherent way? And what you've identified, I very much endorse. And I think it's kind of one example of a bunch of others in this space that's built up over time. Again, maybe partly for agencies, but I think in quite a few cases because of just a series of chairs and committees who've kind of pushed a lot of things too. So anyway, moving on to Representative Greenman, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just because I am next, and I saw your confused look, Representative Mecklen, on the Taylor Swift problem, if folks know the song, like, hey me, I'm the problem, it's me. I think a lot of times in this space, like, especially with agencies, it is because the legislature hasn't made decisions, the legislature hasn't given clear guidance. I think that there's definitely lots of indications of that. And so I encourage folks to use, who may or may not be Swifties, that example, because it seems to resonate with people. But I didn't do a good job of explaining it yesterday. But I actually have a question about that, because it feels to me like, and I'm interested if there's, this is probably not a fair question to ask, because I'm going to ask sort of a little bit of a historical trend. But I think as we think about where does it make sense for to use government resources, to use taxpayer resources to intervene in the labor markets or intervene in workforce spending, just like where does it make sense to use government resources to intervene to support business development innovation, it feels like we should be looking at where are the market failures. because some workforce, and to Representative Bickford's point, there's a youth skills question of what are we doing to make sure that young folks who've never been in the labor market, that people are prepared for the labor market. And then there's this question of on-the-job training or training. We have apprenticeship programs, which are actually a pretty good market, right? People learn, they get their skills, and they are paid, and they are doing productive work for folks. But in other places where we're really just spending government resources to provide skills, particularly industry-specific skills, it feels to me like we should be asking, where are the industries that actually should be providing that on-the-job skills on the job and using the profits they're making to reinvest in their businesses and create that human capital? And where are the places that's not happening and we need to intervene? But I'm wondering if you could help think about how we are thinking a little bit more, because I think to this point of, I think we all identified, it feels like we have not created a system that is strategically responded to Minnesota's long-term or even medium-term workforce. We have sort of created a system that has been built on over time, and there's good work happening for sure. But I think as we think about how what our role is at the state legislature and what our role is with general fund dollars or workforce development dollars, it feels like our focus should be in places where there is a market failure or there is a workforce failure. And I'm wondering how we can both identify that for the now, but also thinking 5 to 10 years out for the future. Because it feels like that, as we realign this, that's where we should be focused, as opposed to just where either we've been or industries that probably can do this and should do this as a part of their capital investment in human capital.
And Commissioner McKinnon, looks like you may have a comment, please.
Mr. Chair, I'll take just a quick second, and then I'll ask Deputy Commissioner Majors to also comment on
sure.
this. When we talk about employers, and we deal with a lot of employers investing in training, they are constantly investing in training. It's not like they're not. They do a substantial amount of training, particularly when it comes to the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Program. This is where that training needs to be, the training that is offered through the MJSP program basically builds capacity at our higher education institutions. That's what this is. And it's building that capacity based on the new needs or new issues that employers are facing. So it's pretty important for our customized training units at our higher education institutions, particularly if we want them to be responsive to business, to be able to do something like this.
Commissioner,
so to answer your,
oh, sorry.
To get a little further into your question, at least from this program's perspective, we don't do a lot of low-income worker training or pathways training, primarily over the last number of years, really because there has been so much there's been other resources that the legislature and others have dedicated to other organizations who are working on that. But the important part of that is that those organizations are also trying to remove the barriers that people are facing to actually even accessing the training, which is really over the last decade has become that much more important. But I think Deputy Commissioner Majors could answer that a little bit better than I could.
Commissioner Majors, please.
Mr. Chair, member, if I may just kind of go back to one point that was raised earlier.
Of course.
Please. And I just wanted to be clear about something. So we have what's called the Minnesota Governor's Workforce Development Board, which is required by law to have under the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. Prior to that, which established in 2013, prior to that, we had what's called a Workforce Investment Act, and what we had private industry councils. And the Governor's Workforce Development Board was established to do the thing I think that the representative was asking, from a statewide level to look at how resources are being used and align the system. So that's been in place since 2013. What I was referring to last year, that happened last year, was there was direction to say we were operating in silos for quite a few years, decades, and that we need to come together as a state. And we've checked around other states, and ask, are they bringing all the partners together around workforce development and talk about the silos and how can we integrate systems more appropriately? And that's the work that's been being done. And a part of that work has also been being done is doing an inventory on the types of workforce programs. And we've set that up where we can look at, see what the multiple workforce programs are that are available in the state. And we're going to start to dive into, as I spoke about earlier, which is trying to figure out how to align the system to avoid duplication, have common measures across the board. So that work is going on. So there's always been a board there and has looked at that work. But this is something really diving into looking at our system as a whole and seeing where there's more alignment. So just wanted to say that. In terms of kind of looking forward, I think we knew back in 2013 that we were going to be in a workforce shortage based upon the demographer's report. I think we should take and look at that information that kind of helps us with looking at how we're spending our money in youth programming and other programming, how we're upskilling folks. And the way that we do that, what's tied to that is also looking at labor market information, essentially. And seeing where we see high job vacancies or where we're projected to see high job vacancies. You saw a little bit of that work and that effort in the Drive for Five effort that was put forward 2 years ago, where we identified five high growth industries where we saw high numbers of vacancies. But we also saw there was a lot of opportunity for advancement for individuals. So for instance, healthcare, tech, education, manufacturing, and construction are the ones that we looked at. And so we saw those investments. And I think the idea is to continue to look at labor market information, use that to help us drive, and also vacancies, and see how we can drive more funding towards training and putting people in those high growth, family sustainable wage opportunities. That's where we're going. And that kind of ties into the work that Deputy Commissioner McKinnon is doing as he's working with business on a regular basis.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that. And I think maybe one of the things you're hearing is I think we probably need to be more engaged in some of that work and both understanding it, but also as we think about our policymaking, I think that there is a sense that probably across the legislature, right, we have sort of been focused on the workforce development account and other things, but actually maybe just need to get more into the work of, and some of it is just learning and listening to you all, but also being more active in how do we think about the state's role in doing those things. Like, I really appreciate what you said about, like, part of what we're doing is making sure that our institutes of higher education are really focused on where they need to be focused. I think we probably need to dig more into how we are part of that. And understanding that, you know, we're probably going to look at through the pandemic, we had a workforce disruption that we were not expecting. Tariffs may cause that too. Who knows what the next, what the future may bring, but we do need to, I think, be a little bit more focused in that work. And so if you have thoughts and suggestions about how, I think there's probably, I don't know how many of there are, the 14 willing members who are really interested in thinking about how do we do some more of that medium-term and long-term strategic planning so that when we're budgeting in ways that make sense for the future of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. I'm going to ask members, we've got a few folks on the list, and if we can keep questions and comments, both members and commissioners, thank you. Kind of keep them concise if we can. Representative Johnson, P, you are up next.
Thank you, Chair. My question is a little bit around the Workforce Development Fund and with what we are seeing now with very real numbers and folks starting to get laid off, lose their jobs at the federal level, the impacts of those grants being pulled back and losing workforce here at the state level. Does that fund and those different regional and local workforce areas have the capacity to address and work with those workers as they are searching for jobs that are probably going to be fairly limited, especially in the special skill sets a lot of those folks have?
I would think that'd be the Commissioner Majors. Commissioner Majors.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, it is... speaking with our team earlier this morning, and I asked the question, are we seeing a higher number of layoffs and higher number of people being laid off as comparison to last year where we were? And the answer is yes. And the our local workforce development boards were funded based upon last year's numbers and where we saw an unemployment rate, well, not the unemployment, but number of layoffs. I would suspect that given the number of layoffs that we're starting to see and seeing them rise, that they're going to need additional funding to actually meet the moment and to be able to serve individuals. And so I would say the answer to that is there would more than likely need additional dollars to provide those services.
Representative Johnson, back to you. Okay. Representative Lesnikar, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you for the presentation. I want to talk a little bit about what Representative Bakeberg said, because I've worked with DEED, and I've learned a lot, too, of the frustrations of figuring out the common ground between higher ed, K-12, corrections. You know, for example, in my district, we have the only work farm in the state of Minnesota. Department of Corrections is called NERC. We're doing programs so that these, working with the trades, so when they leave there that they can go back into the community and work. And so looking at those opportunities, because they're a subset that's going back into the to the workforce. I've worked with Representative Frazier on the criminal background studies and looking at these barriers. So what we do to get people a job on these regional levels and then these local levels, I think the strategic planning is happening within cities and counties. But if that is not mapped out in a way that that logistically shows the opportunities to do that, because the opportunities that we're working on right here of looking at for students, that school systems are trying to transform. Right now, if you look at, because DEED does have, I believe it's called Occupations in Demand, and it lists. I always followed it. It lists the top occupations in demand. So right now, it clearly says CNAs, home health aides, RNs, LPNs, top demands, manufacturing, truck drivers, labor, everything to do with labor. Everything to do with building things, everything to do with restaurants, hospitality, everything to do with teaching. So we have a guide through there that's available to us, and it's been there for a long time. And so having those tools from DEED, I would encourage you to what Representative Bakeberg said, to lay that out and clearly delineate it, because we need to be doing that. When I look at, and then there's also the federal programs through JET, which I've worked with. Working with partnerships. And that program, as of today, the federal job training program has not been cut to Minnesota. So those federal programs that they work on in our communities, they simultaneously are going. So if there's any way that you can work on a platform that doesn't include silo thinking, where we have higher ed and corrections and Minnesota Department of Education laying this out for the communities, I think that would be really helpful, because people don't understand exactly which grant is a grant to apply for. And that has been a struggle. And if it's only been in the thought a cycle for a year, it makes sense to me why there's so many questions. So I think that has to be an absolute priority, and I would encourage that. So thank you for the presentation. It helps to explain where we're at. But I think the occupations in demand are something we should be focusing on.
Thank you, Representative Lesnikar. If you got a quick comment, you could, but otherwise I'm going to move on to other questions. But Representative Commissioner Majors, you got something you want to say about that?
Thank you for the upgrade there, Mr. Chair, but Representative. Yes, I think that you're right. I mean, we've looked at the idea of career pathways. How do you move from MDE programming into either going directly to work or going into a D program? And so forth. But then, and then if you're coming home, where's your pathway in? And I think we've started that work. As I mentioned, again, there was the idea of working together has been out there for a while, but working with our local workforce development areas to map that out, yes.
Okay, good. And Representative Frazier, moving to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioners, one of my thoughts around this is, I was thinking about something. There was a phrase coined by Dr. Myers, who's director of over at the Hubert Humphrey mm-hmm. Center. Mm-hmm. And you probably know what I'm talking about. It's the Minnesota paradox, mm-hmm. right? And when we think about the Minnesota paradox, oftentimes the state of Minnesota is listed as one of the best states to live in. And a list of factors of best place to get a job, average salaries, things of that nature, best schools, outcomes. But then you drill down. And for some of our BIPOC communities, particularly black communities, it is one of the worst states to live in when you look at those drivers and those outcomes. Like currently right now, and to the point I want to get to and the question I want to ask, currently right now, we're looking at, for black folks in the state of Minnesota, the unemployment rate is almost double of what it is for white folks in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how are we ensuring, what is Dean working on to ensure that, and that maybe you need help from us to do this, what are you working on to ensure that our economy works for everyone and everyone is included and no one is left behind?
Commissioner Majors or Commissioner McKinnon? Commissioner Majors, okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, when we looked at, when you do look at the unemployment rate, you could see our unemployment rate for the state is approximately about 3%. And then, as you mentioned, but when you start to dive into different communities, you could see it double, even more so, depending where it is in the state. And I think when we launched the Targeted Career Pathways Grant 2 years ago, the idea was to make investments into low-income communities with high unemployment rate, low education attainment, recognizing that in those communities, you do need to provide some more support, some more education in those communities. Tied to that was also funding to help those organizations that were delivering services in those communities so that they can come up to speed and build capacity building. So it wasn't just kind of one-dimensional saying, let's invest in workforce training, but we also wanted to make sure that those agencies that are providing that training and those support services were also well-positioned to deliver the services there. I think we continue to strive to make sure all Minnesotans, particularly our Minnesotans who are in low-income communities, low education attainment, continue to thrive, and so that they can be part of a stronger part of our economy moving forward, but always open to working on ideas and thoughts with the legislature on how to improve the quality of life for all Minnesotans.
Of course, this is back to you, Representative. It's a massively important topic. We're just reaching 10 a.m., but Representative
Frazier. Very quickly, thank you for that, Deputy Commissioner Majors. I think, and the other, just the point I'll leave us with, I know many folks are probably watching this and they've looked at our budget and they see that we're not going into the Workforce Development Fund right now. Much of what you just said, and the communities you're trying to reach in, many of the organizations that we seek to fund directly to ensure that they have the resources, they actually work directly in those spaces and they're helping to create better outcomes. So I just want to make sure we keep that top of mind when we're thinking about how we ensure that we have an economy that's inclusive for everyone.
This is a massively important topic, deserving its own space and beyond. Chair Baker, I know you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, just to this, I think as one of the co-chairs on the committee and a first-time chair, I will say, too, that I've been on this committee a long time. I had no idea how many accounts we have out there. I had no idea the level of complexity of all these that have been built up over the years of legislators coming and going, starting new programs. Chair Pinto and I have been like, okay, we got to do something about this in the interim. Mr. Majors had said the governor had a thought about we should find all the silos and see where the duplication is and all that stuff. Well, we haven't seen that yet come here. And there's been a lot of reflection moments for me this session. And again, working with Representative Bakeberg on just the simplicity of having him give us a little bit of a org chart of how these different learning kind of sites happen and how we can get to them. But there are so many layers. We have, I think we have a lot of duplication. I have been frustrated on our public school system that we are refunding because kids can't write a resume. They don't know how to answer the phones. And they don't have those soft skills that we think that we should be doing in schools. Something is really broken here, folks. I mean, again, we are here to help people either get reemployed, get second chances. We are there for a lot of those reasons. And so as this committee moves forward, as we kind of just reflect on passing a budget soon with some policy that makes sense for all of us, we just really need to start knowing not how to break down the silos in communications. We got to know where all the silos are. And that, to me, is what our goal has to be, because with all the different boards and the task forces and the governor sets up this and that, and there's been one set up for many years, We just have to know where are they all moving at? What are they talking about? All the duplication of just the time and talent on those boards. I've had people that have been on the governor's board who've been super frustrated, and they haven't stuck around a long time because they don't feel like enough is happening. So I just want to make sure, members, we all are part of this problem. We also know that DEED is a part of the solution as well to help us reevaluate where things are at. And so, again, I look forward to working with you, Chair Pinto, as again, we are understanding the important role our workforce has in our ability to train. Are the money that we have in place in these big, massive accounts, should they be here? Or should we be placing them more in the public school system? And you don't graduate until you know how to write a resume, until you actually can get out and do these kind of things with all the tools that we've been given. So, again, I appreciate the conversation today. We have a long ways to go, and looking forward to finding all the silos. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Baker. I've got a few questions and comments, but I think I'm going to save them for another time as we reach 10 a.m. I just do want to thank the commissioners, I mean, your whole teams for all of your work. It's really, really important work, and we're grateful to you for it and for being with us. Members, I don't know if Chair Baker, if you had any kind of clear as mud type comments that you want to say about what might be up tomorrow.
No. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair. Again, I think tomorrow, just expect a very full committee hearing. We're waiting for some final documents to come out that will be released to the public today. I think we're going to be going through the walkthrough with nonpartisan staff tomorrow. I think we're going to certainly be inviting a lot of testimony tomorrow. So the public that is viewing this, feel free to come forward to us, share your thoughts, your advice, your suggestions. Again, and we'll take that. Again, I hope we can maybe wrap things up tomorrow, unlikely Thursday night, not sure. Again, we got to get leadership direction, but our goal this week, members, is to wrap our omnibus bill up so we can take the next level. So starting at sharp at 8:15 tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we're not done tomorrow night, then do figure there's a decent chance we may be meeting on Friday morning. Members, thank you so much. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.